Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Podcast. This is the B segment, 931B, and do we have a wonderful guest for you today. Sicker, fatter, poorer. Well, that's what's happening to the United States because of medical costs. We are getting sicker, we are getting fatter, and we are poorer because of it. Now, that doesn't mean it's inevitable or it's a one-way street, and there are a lot of things that contribute to it. The bad news from the planet's standpoint and from health standpoint is we've been exporting our bad habits pretty well. The good news from a competitive standpoint is we've been exporting our bad habits pretty well. But Leo Trasandi, who's a pediatrician as well as a researcher in this area, I think he calls himself an epidemiologic or an epi. I'll let him tell you exactly what kind of pediatrician he is. He was trained at all the best places. Other than the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, the next best place would be Boston Children's. That's a inside joke, Leo, because my son is faculty member at CHOP. In any case, he has written an outstanding book, Sicker, Fatter, Poorer, The Urgent Threat of Hormone-Disrupting Chemicals to Our Health and Future and What We Can Do About It. Leo, how did you get involved in the field?
So I came into pediatrics having already gotten a master's in public policy for my medical degree. And that part of the story is interesting in and of itself because I applied to medical school during the Clinton healthcare debate and didn't have an initial interest in health policy until I kept getting questions asking me what I thought about then President Clinton's health plan. And there was a stock answer. And then at one point I.
So that must have been in the early 90s.
That's right. And it was an interesting experience for me to finally respond to one of the interviewers. Well, what do you teach about health policy in the curriculum? And I don't know if I got into that medical school, but it certainly started an interesting conversation. And it got me thinking that I needed to get some health policy training from a medical degree. So between my third and fourth years of medical school, I had the privilege of spending a year at the Kennedy School of Government, where I really caught the bug, if you will, got really interested in health policy. And then after doing my pediatrics residency, I worked for then Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton doing children's and environmental policy. And I understood the child health policy part when I first entered, but my eyes really opened to the role of environment in human health and disease through that experience. And then I was driven to learn more, and then that drove my life's work.
Now, the life's work is concentrating on the way some of the basic things that we run into in society, such as BPA or BPS or phthalates, or other plasticizers affect us. So take one of the items and talk to us about why it affects our hormones and what that does to us.
Well, the biggest area where the field has exploded is on this notion that chemicals literally make you fatter. There's now 50 so-called obesogens. And the prototype is the chemical that you mentioned, bisphenol A or BPA. It's in the lining of aluminum cans and thermal paper receipts. And it makes fat cells bigger, disrupts the function of a protein that protects the heart called adiponectin. And it's a synthetic estrogen. And that means that it can have sex-specific effects on body mass, especially as puberty unfolds.
Now, wait a second. You've got to go slowly because I don't have a medical audience. I have a lay audience. So let's talk about what you mean by sex-specific effects.
Sure. So if you have an estrogen, exposure that is not part of the body's normal capacity from the perspective of what the body produces naturally, you can have disrupted signaling about whether the body should take on more muscle as opposed to fat or sugar or carbohydrates. And that's the new science here. It's not all simply diet and physical activity. Clearly, diet and physical activity are the leading drivers of the obesity and diabetes epidemics we have in the United States today. But we understand chemical factors as a third and equally important factor in that epidemic now. To take another example,
so these actually, I'm going to challenge you on that. I think it is stress. So when we do stress management at the Cleveland Clinic, when we obviously have physical activity and food choice and other programs, but when we put stress management in first, people lose weight irrespective of trying to lose weight. And so we're actually convinced, and our employees have lost on average half a pound a year, as opposed to the national average of gaining 0.37 percent of a pound, or 0.37 pounds a year. So the
That's
point
impressive.
Is, well, they've lost the total. They our employees, and this is scale-based weight in medical offices, 97% of our employees and dependents use our own physicians, so we're able to get EMR data. And it's 750,000 pounds they've lost, 101,000 of them, compared to the gain. Some of those are in weight management programs. So the average employee loses half a pound, not in a weight management program per year. But anyway, let's come back to, I just wanted to challenge the concept that it was physical inactivity or food, both of which contribute, obviously, but stress may be underlying those choices.
And your use of the example of stress supports what we're talking about with synthetic chemicals, because stress acts through what we call the HPA axis. And I don't want to get into jargon, but it's the axis, a major hormonal axis in our body that quite literally manages a variety of basic things from sleep to diet and appetite and things like that. And if you throw off the balance of that axis, be it from a stressful exposure that surges your cortisol to a synthetic chemical that mimics or disrupts the function of a hormonal signal that's an important pathway in the body, you can set yourself up for shifting calories into fat as opposed to shifting calories into muscle, or even fundamentally messing with your body's burn rate of calories. So there's a class of chemicals called these Teflon-like chemicals, the perfluoroalkyl chemicals, that have been found to be associated with gaining weight back after weight loss interventions in women. And what they found when they looked deeper was that the body's metabolism rate was slower in relationship to the levels of the perfluoroalkyl compounds or the Teflon-like compounds that were detected in these women's sera. So I see the psychological stress that you're talking about as going hand in hand with these synthetic chemical exposures that also can disrupt the hormonal signaling in our body.
We're talking with Dr. Leonardo on the book title, Trasandi, T-R-A-S-A-N-D-E, who's a pediatrician at, I think, NYU Langone Medical Center, who's written a really what I consider an outstanding book, referenced well, but more importantly, describes the problems of the, what I would call, hormone disrupting pollution in our society. So these things disrupt hormones in a way that is said to foster estrogen a lot. Is that true? And is it an estrogen that gets to our estrogen receptors and has estrogen effect? or is it an estrogen that blocks the estrogen receptors and causes an anti-estrogen effect? Or is there some
most
of both?
Most of the science early on focused on estrogen activity, activating estrogen pathways in the body, that receptors and such. But now we realize it's a lot more complicated. It involves both activation and repression of sex hormones. And the reality is that the male sex hormonal pathway is also involved. The plasticizing chemicals, phthalates, are known to disrupt the male sex hormone, testosterone, which is important, as you know, from a host of conditions ranging from impotence even to reproductive birth defects in little boys, but even back at the other end of the life course, early mortality from cardiovascular disease. The whole notion of low T can be being either a marker for or a predictor of later cardiovascular risk.
Now, one of the questions that obviously comes from this is, BPA has been banned from baby bottles. And it's right. In thermal receipts, and you can avoid those pretty easily. But for instance, if you eat cannelli beans, or if you eat food such as diced tomatoes that are already prepared for you, or corn, how much are you getting relative to the receipt or to the BPA bottle? And should we be trying to find alternatives so we can ban those things?
Well, the reality is that all three sources are important. We've taken care of one. And yes, getting rid of or saying no to the thermal paper receipt is a really important step as well. We did a study.
I should tell you, we did 17 hours of filming at fast food restaurants in Cleveland for the Oz Show on that. And about 50% of grandparents, both men and women, take the receipt, touch the receipt, and then touch or peel back the child's food, touching the food with the unwashed but still laden with BPA from the thermal receipt hand. Now, the men stuff it in a pocket. The women stuff it in their purse, so they aren't doing anything with it. But anyway, we did do a show trying to stop that for that. That was about 5 years ago. But anyway, those receipts are still there, and there's no reason to take them. I mean, what a grandparent doesn't do anything with that receipt.
That's right. And we're at an interesting point where that's even going viral, and you're seeing a lot of companies get into electronic receipts as a complete substitute across all the ages and stages. But with respect to cans, there seems to be some reticence to replace BPA with safer alternatives. And we did a study a couple of years back looking at a hypothetical universe in which we substituted BPA with something free of health effects. And what we found was that the cost of one of the safer alternatives was almost made up for by health benefits of reducing childhood obesity and adult cardiovascular disease. In some scenarios, there were actually net benefits over and above the costs of replacing BPA with the safer alternatives. And as you know, there are a lot of effects of BPA that we know now, not just things like childhood obesity and adult cardiovascular disease, but the ovary, for example, is particularly vulnerable with consequences for women's health as well.
Now, one of the questions that comes up is some of the gender identity issues that kids have in high school related to this? In other words, because it disrupts both estrogen and testosterone production or their metabolism, is that part of the problem with or part of the change in gender identity that's occurred over the last 30 years?
I'm not going to rule it out, but there's very little information on this point. What I can tell you is that there's a lot more information about a broader and more diverse array of consequences of these exposures for babies when they're born with birth defects, for children who develop obesity, even adolescents with polycystic ovary syndrome, not to mention adult diabetes and cardiovascular risks, and then even certain cancers like breast cancer and prostate cancer. And again, I'm not drawing the entire circle around all of these conditions. The reality is all the same that if it's a small but substantial proportion, that is a big impact across the entire U.S. population and costs us all as a society. The costs of endocrine-disrupting chemicals, we found back a couple years ago to be $340 billion a year in the United States. That's 2.3% of our gross domestic product. And that study only looked at less than 5% of EDCs, a subset of diseases linked to these EDCs, and a subset of costs linked to the diseases due to these EDCs.
Yeah, so we should make sure people know EDC is endocrine-disrupting chemicals.
That's right. And
so go ahead.
So we looked
I didn't
at a
mean
subset.
Interrupting, but yep.
No, please. I'm glad you did. So this is an underestimate of an underestimate of an underestimate of the costs that society experiences as a result of these chemicals that mess with hormones and ultimately contribute to disease.
Now, my field of study is actually longevity. And one of the concerns about going forward is that sperm counts around the world are going down. And you make
yes.
the point that these chemicals, the phthalates, the plasticizers, BPA, but I think it was both the phthalates and pesticides, were may have a substantial role in the decrement in sperm count. Did I read that right?
That's right. I mean, there are other factors that are concerns as we think about this. But the book turned into a movie called Children of Men, or if you watch more recent TV, The Handmaid's Tale, really warn us about a reality that's closer than we think. We've seen over the past four decades in developed countries a nearly 50% drop-off in sperm counts. And it's difficult to write that off completely due to genetics. Yes, there's been increases in obesity that could be involved partially. There are other risk factors that you could speculate might be behind it, but study after study has documented decreases in these sperm counts in relationship to exposures to phthalates, which are known to mess with testosterone directly. And so it's not so far off from putting together cause and effect. I mean, we're never going to be certain. There are always going to be shades of gray. But we have to ask ourselves fundamentally, are we willing to gamble with our health here? Especially when there might be consequences for the size of the population, among other key factors in our own economic growth.
Now, are there alternatives? There are alternatives to, obviously, the printed receipt. There are alternatives to the can lining. You said, about 2 years ago, I bring my lunch, which is largely salmon burgers and a vegetable, to work every day, and I went from bringing it in a plastic, if you will, reusable container to a glass reusable container. And my mother-in-law came over and said, we always used to use glass containers 30 years ago and more. Are glass containers making a comeback, or am I just one of the weird ones who's doing this?
No, they've taken over our household and many others. There are a lot of colleagues I work with that get to know me that change over their kitchens in response to hearing what I have to say and what I can say about the science. And that really speaks to the power of the consumer. Look at the BPA-free movement in baby bottles and sippy cups. The reason FDA banned BPA wasn't the substantial science that had already existed at the time. It was the consumer attention to the issue that drove the companies to go to the Food and Drug Administration and insist on the ban in the first place. So that speaks to how much power we all have as consumers. More recently, two major supermarket chains were forced to essentially take their buffet-style food packaging out of service. And that's because study had found levels of perfluoroalkyl compounds, these Teflon-like compounds that mess with thyroid and have consequences for a variety of organs in the body, including the male reproductive tract. And all of a sudden, you saw on Twitter and Facebook these packages getting set aside. And companies have the market share that can really be a force multiplier over and above what individual consumers can do.
We've been talking with Dr. Leo Trasandi, T-R-A-S-A-N-D-E, author of Sicker, Fatter, Poorer, and the subtitle, The Urgent Threat of Hormone-Disrupting Chemicals to Our Health and Future and What We Can Do About It, a Harcourt or Houghton Mifflin Harcourt book, and obviously available on Amazon and at other stores as well, Barnes & Noble, etc. We got a question when we tweeted that we were going to interview you. A question came to us about other chemicals in, and I was unaware of this, but I saw some other stories and I don't know how true they are, but this is the black plastic takeout kind of where it said that they had found a incidence of arsenic in it that was fairly and substantially high and that leached into food stored overnight. In other words, people would get these from restaurants or takeout food and it would leach into it. Is there any truth to that, that black plastic is worse than white plastic or something else? Or clear plastic?
I'd have to read a bit more on the studies that describe the data. I've certainly not seen that description, though there are enough concerns I've already described about plastic. To begin with, we know that metals like tin are impurities in this plastic, and they, by the way, might also be involved as contributors to obesity. But suffice it to say, in our household, if we get something in a plastic container, it pretty quickly goes into glass.
We've been talking, and I want to thank you, Leo, for coming on to a real expert in this area who's written a wonderful book, referenced well if you want to look at it as well, Sicker, Fatter, Poorer, The Urgent Threat of Hormone-Disrupting Chemicals to Our Health and Future and What We Can Do About It. Last name is Trasandi, T-R-A-S-A-N-D-E, a physician and pediatrician at the New York Lagone Health Center. I think you're at where are you physically located, Leo?
I'm on the east side of Manhattan at 34th Street, right across from our new Hassenfeld Children's Hospital.
And do you see patients, or is this, have you become a pure academic researcher?
I still see patients one half day a week. I'd really do that because I feel that that's the way I can bring the research back to the patient and then bring the patient concerns of kids and the public back to the research I do. It's been really what's driven me from day one. This is really about improving people's lives, more than one patient at a time, but it's through individual patient stories that this story lives.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Leo is obviously, that's how most of us in academic medicine get our stimulation from patients and then take that to a research lab where we can help improve life. And Leo, in this book, Sicker, Fatter, Poorer, has done a real great service and is doing a great service to all of us. Thanks again, Leo. And Ben, thanks for great engineering, but especially to you, the listener. Thank you for listening and for downloading us. It is what makes it worthwhile to me and to all of us involved in producing these podcasts. This is 930B, Dr. Leo Trasandi, Sicker, Fatter, Poorer. Thanks again.